Claude Frederic Bastiat from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, http://en.wikipedia.org/wiki/Bastiat. Claude Frederic Bastiat, born June 30, 1801, died December 24, 1850, was a French classic liberal author and political economist. Section 1. Biography. Bastiat was born in Bayonne, Aquitaine, France. His public career as an economist began only in 1844 and was cut short by his untimely death in 1850. Bastiat had caught tuberculosis, probably during his tours through France to promote libertarian ideas, and that illness eventually prevented him from making further speeches, particularly at the Legislative Assembly, to which he was elected in 1848 and 1849, and took his life. Frederic Bastiat died in Rome, Italy, on December 24, 1850. He declared on his deathbed that his friend Gustave de Molinari, publisher of his masterpiece The Law in 1849, was his spiritual heir. Section 2. Views. Bastiat can be said to be of the harmonic school of libertarians, who consider utilitarian and natural law arguments as two complementary aspects of the same world. Bastiat did not take part in the anarchist-minarchist debate. He arguably died too early for that. He seems to have considered the state as something inevitable as far as immediate practical matter, something that ought to be taken into account as long as it existed. However, like all classical liberals, Bastiat maintained a deep distrust of all government in any form, and worked all his life to demonstrate that government control of private individuals and regulation of private industry is inefficient, economically damaging, and morally wrong. Because of his stress on the role of consumer demand in initiating economic progress, Bastiat is seen as a forerunner of the Austrian school of economics. One of Bastiat's most important contributions to the field of economics was his admonition to the effect that good economic decisions can only be made by taking into account the full picture. That is, economic truth should be arrived at by observing not only the immediate consequences, i.e. benefits or liabilities, of an economic decision, but also by examining the long-term consequences. Additionally, one must examine the decision's effect not only on a single group of people, say candle makers, or a single industry, say candles, but also on all people and all industries in the society as a whole. As Bastiat famously put it, an economist must take into account both what is seen and what is not seen. Bastiat's rule was later expounded by Henry Hazlitt in his work Economics in One Lesson. Section 3. Works. Bastiat was the author of many works on economic and political economy, generally characterized by their clear organization, forceful argument, and acerbic wit. Among his most well-known books is Economic Fallacies, which contains many trenchmark attacks on statist, i.e. progressive, politics. Bastiat wrote it while living in England in an attempt to advise the shapers of the French Republic on pitfalls to avoid. Contained within Economic Fallacies is the famous satirical episode best known as the Candlemakers' Petition, which presents itself as a demand from the Candlemakers' Guild to the French government, asking the government to block out the sun to prevent its unfair competition with their products. Much like Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal or Benjamin Franklin's anti-slavery works, Bastiat's argument cleverly highlights the basic flaws in state support of industry by demonstrating its absurdity when carried to a logical extreme. Bastiat's most famous work, however, is undoubtedly The Law, originally published as a pamphlet in 1850. It deals with the issues underlying the development of a just and free system of laws, and how such laws should be applied in a free society. Section 4. Bastiat's Negative Railroad. A famous section of Economic Fallacies concerns the way that tariffs are inherently counterproductive. Bastiat posits a theoretical railway between Spain and France that is built in order to reduce the costs of trade between the two countries. This is achieved, of course, by making goods move to and from the two nations faster and more easily. Bastiat demonstrates that this situation benefits both countries' consumers because it reduces the cost of shipping goods, and therefore reduces the price at market for those goods. However, each country's producers begin to rail at their governments because the other country's producers can now provide certain goods to the domestic market at a reduced price. Domestic producers of these goods are afraid of being outcompeted by the newly viable industry from the other country. So, these domestic producers demand that tariffs be enacted to artificially raise the cost of foreign goods back to their pre-railroad levels so they can continue to compete. Bastiat raises two highly trenchant points here. 1. Even if the producers in a society are benefited by these tariffs, which Bastiat goes on to prove that they are not, the consumers in that society are clearly hurt by the tariffs, as they are now unable to secure the goods they want at the low price they should be able to secure them at. 2. The tariffs completely negate any gains made by the railroad, and therefore make it essentially pointless. To further demonstrate his points, Bastiat suggests that, rather than enacting tariffs, the government should simply destroy the railroad anywhere that foreign goods can outcompete local goods. Since this would be just about everywhere, he goes on to suggest that the government should simply build a broken or negative railroad from the start, and not waste time with tariffs and rail building. This is an example of Bastiat's consummate skill with the reducto ad absurdum rhetorical technique. Indeed, we can take Bastiat's argument even further and see that by examining everything from the perspective of the producer, society would be best if we were regressed to a caveman state, where supply of goods was at maximum scarcity. Then people would have to work as hard as possible for as little as possible and never have to fear outside competition. In short, Bastiat proves two major points. 1. All economic decisions should be made with the consumer in mind. This is central to Bastiat's ideas and to all laissez-faire thought. 2. Tariffs serve no purpose but to negate the gains provided to society by technology, labour, ingenuity, determination, and progress. Section 5. Selected Quotations. 1. If the natural tendencies of mankind are so bad that it is not safe to permit people to be free, how is it that the tendencies of these organisers are always good? Do not the legislators and their appointed agents also belong to the human race, or do they believe that they themselves are made of a finer clay than the rest of mankind? That's from the law. 2. When under the pretext of fraternity, the legal code imposes mutual sacrifices on the citizens, human nature is not thereby abrogated. Everyone will then direct his efforts towards contributing little to, and taking much from, the common fund of sacrifices. Now, is it the most unfortunate who gains from this struggle? Certainly not, but rather the most influential and calculating. That's also from the law. 3. Life, faculties, production. In other words, individuality, liberty, property. This is man. In spite of the cunning and artful political leaders, these three gifts from God precede all human legislation and are superior to it. Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. 4. But how is this legal plunder to be identified? Quite simply, see if the law takes from some persons what belongs to them and gives it to other persons to whom it does not belong. See if the law benefits one citizen at the expense of another by doing what the citizen himself cannot do without committing a crime. From the law. Number 5. Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavours to live at the expense of everyone else. From government. Number 6. Socialism, like the ancient ideas from which it springs, confuses the distinction between government and society. As a result of this, every time we object to a thing being done by the government, the socialists conclude that we object to its being done at all. We disapprove of state education. Then the socialists say that we are opposed to any education. We object to a state religion. Then the socialists say we want no religion at all. We object to a state enforced equality. Then they say we are against equality. And so on, and so on, and so on. It is as if the socialists were to accuse us of not wanting persons to eat because we do not want the state to raise grain. From the law. Number 7. It seems to me that this is theoretically right. For whatever the question under discussion, whether religious, philosophical, political, or economic, whether it concerns prosperity, morality, equality, right, justice, progress, responsibility, cooperation, property, labour, trade, capital, wages, taxes, population, finance, or government. At whatever point on the scientific horizon I begin my researches, I invariably reach this one conclusion. The solution to all the problems of human relationships is to be found in liberty. From the law. Finally, try to imagine a regulation of labour imposed by force that is not a violation of liberty, a transfer of wealth by force that is not a violation of property. If you cannot reconcile these contradictions, then you must conclude that the law cannot organise labour and industry without organising injustice. From the law. See also Frederick Bastiat's debate with Proudhon, his parable of the broken window, liberalism, and contributions to liberal theory. You can also download a copy of The Law in PDF format at the Mises Institute at www.mises.org/books/thelaw.pdf. And it's a very good read. The sound file and all text in the article are licensed under the GNU Free Documentation License, available at www.gnu.org/copyleft/fdl.html.